Louisiana Eats is brought to you with support from Louisiana Fish Fry, a staple of Louisiana kitchens for nearly 40 years. Maker of batters, coatings, boils, tartar sauce, cocktail sauce, and more. Louisiana Fish Fry, because life needs Louisiana flavor. From our studios in the Southern Food and Beverage Museum in New Orleans, this is Louisiana Eats. I'm Poppy Tooker. If you're hankering to take a trip far, far away, this week's show is just what the doctor ordered. We're traveling south of the border, way south, all the way to Argentina. Late last year, I made the long trek. Yes, it was a 10-hour flight from Dallas to Buenos Aires, where I discovered a cosmopolitan city that sometimes felt like Paris and sometimes like Manhattan. The people were so colorful, kind, and accommodating. While the gaucho tradition, along with the giant portions of meat, is still prevalent, Argentinian cuisine has undergone a major revolution in the past 10 to 15 years. Culinary superstar Narda Lepas joins us to explain her role in the revolution. Expat Ali Lazar gives us a tour of the old and new flavors as she explains why Argentina is so seductive she simply can't leave it behind. And we sit down at the Bosch Palace with American Ambassador Mark Stanley for his point of view on the food and the life in Argentina. Get your passports out, because we're heading way south of the border on this week's Louisiana Eats. I arrived in Buenos Aires in early November, when spring was just beginning to bloom in the southern hemisphere. On a gray and rainy afternoon, I was greeted in the lobby of my hotel by an American expat who'd promised to take me on a tour of San Telmo, the neighborhood I was staying in.
My name is Ali Lazar. I am a food writer and I work in TV production.
And you're an expat living here in Buenos Aires, correct?
I am an expat. Yes, I do live in Buenos Aires. I've been here for about 17 years. So I came here first in 2006 to study abroad, and then time flies.
And so what our plan is, we're going to go out on the street and walk over to the market.
Yeah, let's go. We'll brace the rain.
So this is the way?
This is the way, yeah. Not the best weather, which is unseasonal for this time, because usually November is the best time of year. It's the beginning of spring, so it's actually my favorite time of year to be here. But right now it's quite raining.
It is.
And the city in the rain, it's not, I mean, it's, you know, it can be romantic sometimes, but a lot of the streets are cobblestones, so it's a little slippery. So you got to be careful with your shoes.
Yeah.
And where you walk, too.
Yeah.
So we're going to go straight.
Okay. San Telmo is one of Buenos Aires' oldest neighborhoods and a real hotspot for both tourists and the city's residents, known as porteños. The streets are usually bustling, but the way the rain kept pouring down that chilly afternoon, foot traffic was at a minimum. Not wanting to get soaked, Ali and I followed the alluring scent of seasoned beef and incense to a tiny storefront on Independence Avenue. We ducked into an intimate room filled with hundreds of little trinkets and curios to find the owner, Don Beto, cooking up his signature empanadas.
Tell us all about where we are.
Right now we're at El Gauchito in San Telmo. We took a little pit stop because it's raining so hard, but it's a good thing because these are some of my favorite empanadas in the city. Beto, who is the owner, makes just fabulously regional empanadas from the north of Argentina. Beto is from La Rioja, which is a province, and usually the type of food you'll find there are empanadas, locro, and this kind of really stick-to-your-bones country food.
Good for today.
Primero le doy buenos días y les agradezco de que estén acá.
He's saying good day, good morning, and he's really happy that we're here.
A pesar de que el día está lluvioso, ustedes cada uno irradia un rayo de sol.
Even though it's raining outside, each one of us are bringing a light of sunshine.
Ali, would you explain to me the significance and the importance of the empanada here in Argentina?
I mean, empanada is really the perfect food, if you think about it. And you look all over the world, there's some forms of empanada everywhere. So you have samosas in India, you know, you have patties in Jamaica. And in Argentina, it's so wonderful because it's something that you can eat on the go. It's something that you can eat at a party. It's just very convenient and easy. I like to have a general rule of like 1 to 2 empanadas as a snack, but like 3, 4, 5 is a meal. And when you order it from certain places, they have so many different kinds of empanadas too. So you can go get all different kinds and try a bunch. And some of the empanada shops, each way that they crimp them, that they fold them, each one will have a different fold. So you'll know what kind of empanada you have by the way that it's folded.
Esta empanada la he traído en mi corazón, en mi memoria.
This empanada is from in his heart, in his memory, in his whole being, from his childhood.
Son las memorias de una señora mayor que
his father worked in a community, a mining community, and he remembers when he was little there was an older woman who lived there as well. And so these empanadas are from what she cooked for you. This is her recipe, this woman's recipe.
Our time with Don Beto is one of my most treasured memories. Aside from the empanadas, he served us a hearty, meat-filled stew that was a recipe from his grandmother's home in northern Argentina.
Salud.
Pouring us little glasses of wine, we sat down to visit as he explained all the memorabilia crammed into his tiny little space. By the time we ate our fill, we felt like family. Luckily, the rain had started to let up, and Ali and I ventured back out to find our intended destination, the San Telmo Market.
Ali, this market dates back to 1897?
It was around the late 1800s, early 1900s. And this market, it's generally known to be the antique market, but historically, it's where a lot of the butcher shops were, the vegetable shops. So back in the day, this is where people would come and shop for all their goods. Now what you'll see is it's completely changed, and it's a little bit more modernized. It's a busy day because of the rain, so people, that's why it's even extra busy. I said we should go during the weekday because I thought it wouldn't be as busy on the weekends, but right now it's just packed.
As we walked around the giant maze of a building, I came across stalls filled with fresh fruit, spices, antiques, and coffee.
So fascinating, there seems to be a little bit of everything.
Ali and I then made our way over to another stall in the market, Biba Cochina, where some young cooks are offering fresh new takes on traditional classic home-style dishes.
How old are these gentlemen? They're a younger generation, huh?
Yeah, I would say maybe early 30s or so. I've been writing about food in Argentina for maybe about 15 years. And when I first started, it was talking about an older generation. And now that I've been here for so long, and it's for me, you know, it ages me. But it also is really cool to see when I say younger generation. Some of these cooks, I remember when they were kids just starting cooking. 18, 19, and now, you know, do the math, 15 years later, some of them have their own restaurants, they've done really amazing things. So it's really been, for me personally, interesting to see the evolution of food in Argentina and the food scene and the restaurant scene and how it's evolved and where a lot of really talented chefs have gone. I mean, a lot of them maybe have traveled abroad and they've gone to Europe or the U.S., and then many of them have come back to Argentina to open things. And it's really very exciting and cool time for the food industry because there's just so many restaurants and there's so many just really great food. And I would say that maybe if you asked me 10, 15 years ago, I wouldn't say Argentina had excellent food. And now really the quality is just so good, and that's a lot thanks to these really just talented cooks. Gracias. We got something that came to the table.
Ah, a little present.
A little present that came to the table. These are palmeritas, which is like a sweet cookie. Argentine, they do great baked goods, great pastries. And so here what we have was, I believe that they mixed it with a type of blue cheese, and maybe that is pear on top. And so it's kind of like a sweet, savory bite that is kind of 1-2 bites in and a little nice little appetizer.
How lovely.
After delighting in that cookie, I explored the market with Ali some more. We walked past stand after stand of bakeries offering all manner of pastries and sweets. Those Argentinians really have a sweet tooth. There were bakeries everywhere in Buenos Aires, sometimes two or three on a single block. I asked Ali to explain the role that sweets play in Argentina.
Sweets play such a big role. People love sweets. There's a whole meal that is between lunch and dinner called merienda. And it's like a tea time type meal. And, you know, people eat late, so they need something to tide them over. And during that time is the time where people eat a lot of sweets. The immigration story of Argentina, too, shows a lot of immigrants from all over kind of different places in Europe, and they brought their baked goods, they brought sweets with them.
Ali, this is just such a sophisticated, elegant city. It's all so charming. They bring you a little tiny glass of bubbly water when you sit down. It comes with your coffee. Tell me about your experience with all of that fanciness.
It goes down to tradition and the value, especially of service and hospitality, making sure, and it's like kind of what the Beto at the empanada shop was talking about. You're in his house, he wants to be as hospitable as possible. So when you go to even just like a cafe on the corner, you might just order like a little sweet pastry, but they're gonna bring you a little bit of juice and a little bit of bubbly water, and the waiter might be wearing like a bow tie and serve you and call you madame. It's just whole part of the experience and the joy of eating out. People love to go out to eat here. I think no matter what the economy is like, no matter, you know, how much people can't make it to the end of the month, which, you know, is a serious, serious issue, people love to go out. They love to be seen. They love to go out to eat and try new things and go to restaurants. And that kind of hospitality is a really important part of the industry.
It's really a lovely place to be. No wonder you want to stay.
I know, yeah.
Of course.
That was American expat and food writer Ali Lazar, touring the San Telmo neighborhood and San Telmo market with me in Buenos Aires. You can find her mouth-watering food posts on Instagram using the handle PickUpTheFork. Coming up next, our tour of Buenos Aires continues as we head north to the city's Belgrano neighborhood. There, celebrity chef Narda Lepez serves up vegetable-forward dishes at her restaurant, Narda Comedor. Louisiana Eats returns after the break. I'm Poppy Tooker, and you're listening to Louisiana Eats, edible content for Louisiana food lovers. Louisiana Eats is brought to you with major support from Crystal Hot Sauce, always made with just three simple ingredients: aged red cayenne peppers, distilled white vinegar, and salt. Nothing artificial. Crystal Hot Sauce. Step out of the heat and into the flavor. From Rouse's Markets, synonymous with seafood, straight from Louisiana's waterways. Rouse's Markets tastes like home. And from Camellia Brand, Beans Done Right, a New Orleans tradition since 1923. Camellia's latest innovation makes life easy for today's smaller households. Beans for two. If a bag of beans is too big for your family, Camellia's New Orleans-style red beans for two and Cajun-style white beans for two has everything needed for dinner in today's smaller households. Learn more at CamelliaBrand.com. If you're just joining us, this week, Louisiana Eats is in Buenos Aires, where we're learning about the culture of Argentina and its evolving food scene. This is a country that's famous for its meat-centric diet. In fact, I've never seen or eaten as much delicious beef as I did there. But in the Belgrano neighborhood on the north side of the city, one celebrity chef is helping diners get their greens.
I am Narda Lepez. I'm from Argentina. I cook. I love food, and I love to get people engaged with it.
If you can imagine a food activist in the style of Chez Panisse's Alice Waters, combined with the hungry wanderlust of Anthony Bourdain, there you have Narda Lepez. Indisputably one of the top female chefs in Latin America, Narda Lepez is well known for her cookbooks, award-winning, long-running food and travel TV series, and her flagship restaurant, Narda Comedor. The restaurant opened in 2017 with an unusually vegetable-forward menu, which has since been hailed by critics as one of the best in the world. And I can personally testify that's no exaggeration. The magic she conjures with a simple braised onion served on a silky potato puree was unlike anything I'd ever eaten before. After touring the dining room and open kitchen, we went upstairs to chat about Argentinian cuisine, Narda's food activism, and what it's like to be a woman in a male-dominated industry. So, Narda, how did food become your life?
I come from a family where food is in the core of it, the center of it. My father and my mother, they get separated when I was really young, like 1 year old. Both of my houses, food was very important. It was something that you pay attention to, something that you care for. And then when I was around seven, I get to go to houses where not in my family's radio of influence were mine, like school or different kids that you met, and you go to their house and you get to eat their family food. Then I came to the realization that not all food is good, not all food is yummy, and I didn't love all kinds of food because there were ones that are really bad. So then I said, okay, I have to look for it. If I want have good food, I have to search for it and learn how to recognize it. My radar was turned on around that age, and I'd rather eat an apple than a bad cooked meal, yeah. or a ultra processed that I don't like.
So did you train? How did you go into the restaurant business?
I trained a little bit here at a cooking school that was really old school, but it was okay. I learned the basics and it was okay. And then I went to France, apprenticeship, and they let me try different foods, and I learned how to work, and I learned how to be the only woman in the kitchen, and I learned how to, and I was really young. I was 22, but I came from, again, family give me tools, give me a great array of different kinds of foods to eat when I was a kid, and I was an only child for 16 years, so I grew up as an only child, so I travel and I go to restaurants. If you have four siblings, you don't go to that much, kind of a lot of restaurants, but I did, and that was great. I lived in Venezuela also. We lived in Brazil for a year, so, and I travel a lot, so that gave me a palate. And then it gave me tools, because my mother was a, I don't want to say feminist, because the word wasn't around. Now I can tell that she was, and my father also. So I had tools to navigate that easily. And I said a lot of bad words. That's one of the tools. Like, shut up, you or something like that. That was a tool. Now I regret a little bit of that needed to be a tool. Like, for example, trying to convince someone but make them think that they came out with it. The idea that I want to do that, the strategic thing would be for you to think that it's your idea so we can make it. I learned how to do that in different places, but it's something that I don't do anymore. But I knew that I had to do it.
Well, often in my experience, the restaurant comes first and the TV show comes later. So you have to explain to me how you go to France, you stage, you acquire your skills, and then you spend 20 years on TV. What was that about?
I get bored really easily. And so I work in the kitchen for a while, and I knew that I didn't love the service. And I love working, and I love food, and I said, okay, this, I don't want to do this every day like this. And then I started, I opened one restaurant, and then I helped somebody else open it. I like the startup of things and thinking about them, and then somebody asked me, would you go to a casting for a TV? Because I said that I knew a lot of young chefs and nobody came, so would you do this for me? It was a partner of a restaurant that I was working, and I said, okay, if you fix the elevator, or there comes the small elevator in the kitchen, if you fix that, I'll go. And I went there. So I had no interest whatsoever in that casting. I did that to get the elevator in the restaurant, in the kitchen, working. When I was there, I liked the people there, and I tell them an anecdote or some nasty thing that happened to me eating a paella with the head of a rabbit that I sucked the eye of it, and it was, and I don't know why I said that, and they find it funny, and I made a sandwich talking about it, and maybe it was because I could talk and make a sandwich at the same time, and then I said, okay, let's try this. So we tried. They said, smile, and I couldn't smile. I didn't want to smile. I said, why should I smile? I don't want to, like, brighten your afternoon. You're here to learn how to cook, so let's do this. And they said, okay, let's try without smiling a lot. So I did, and I learned. And when it came out, I started realizing that people were doing what I was saying, and that was powerful. At first, I was cooking for my peers, chefs. I wanted to show people what I know, but I realized that the people that were talking to me on the street, they weren't my peers. They were people that didn't cook or almost never eaten a nice food that they really love, because they don't go to a lot of restaurants also, or only in restaurants, or they don't only eat meat and potatoes and pasta. And they said, I like that you did. I will try, like, a broccoli. And I said, oh, my God, would you try a broccoli? I'm dying. So I started, okay, I will take this, like, Spider-Man thing, right? Responsibility, right? Power, yes. Responsibility thing.
So, Narda, I'd like you to tell me how you have reinterpreted Argentinian cuisine, or have you completely changed it and introduced something new? You know, you come here, the guidebooks, everything says, there are no vegetables. But there is produce here.
I worked on TV for 20 years, and I travel a lot with the cooking show that I did. It was a travel show, and through food, I went to different countries, different cultures, and I learned a lot. And it gives you scale. Once you understand and try to read through the scale of things, and you see through that lens, you get a real sense of what's going on anywhere. If you go to the central market in Argentina and you see the numbers, 80% of what we consume, 80% of what it sells there is tomato, onion, potato, peppers, and oranges. That's the main thing that we eat, 80% of it. So we don't have a lot of variety on our tables. Even though if you come to Buenos Aires and you come to the nice restaurants that we have now, you will see a lot of vegetables, but that took a lot of work. But still, we have a lot to go because those numbers haven't changed, the big ones. So I try to aim for the big ones. But in a restaurant, you have to talk to the people that come to it, that it's small. I have a 80 seats place. So you have to learn to talk to 86, and you have to learn to talk or try to talk to a few million or talk to the people that can change the way those few millions eat. So that's both sides of my work, that it's feeding people and trying to change the way that people get access to food.
Well, my goodness, I hope that this, I hope this isn't the wrong thing to say, but it seems to me that you must be Argentina's answer to Alice Waters.
I haven't met her personally, but I think that it's a lot. I think it's a lot. But of course, I think it will always be a woman, the one who does that work, because you put your spotlight and you try to shine it through into something else, maybe Sprout or or Pierre or somebody else. The work of cooks, not chefs, but cooks today, it's the relationship that we have with food is, it's broken, it's getting eroded, that relationship with it, and I think we should help maintain it as healthy as we can. It's that relationship. You gotta love what you're eating. You're gonna love it. You're gonna find a way to love. What is it that you have difficulty with? I don't know, celery or fennel, or there's a way that you're gonna love fennel. There has to be a way, and that's if you have a cook near you that say, help me get to love this.
Narda, this is one of the most thrilling conversations that I have had in memory. It is such an incredible thing to come so, so far away to a different place and hear the same love song being sung about food. Isn't that basically what it's all about, loving people with food?
I think it's the base of everything, and sometimes you have to work with love, and sometimes you have to work with knowledge and technique to get that scale. But the love of food has to be at the end also. And I think that we can have art, and we can have concept food, and we can have a lot of things. But at the base of it, food has to be good, has to be tasty. And you have to teach people to learn how to love food, because maybe you're lucky and you were born with it, or maybe you're even luckier and you were taught when you were a kid and you love food since you're a kid, and that it's a blessing. But there's a lot of people that don't have that blessing. One is affordability, the other one is availability, and the other one is ignorance, that they just nobody showed them. So if you can do something in those three, affordability, accessibility, and knowledge, just do it.
Well, thank you for sharing all of this remarkable magic with us.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And thank you for showing a little bit of Argentina in your show.
Narda Lepez, Argentinian chef, entrepreneur, and activist. Coming up next, we show you a little bit more of Argentina as we step inside the Bosch Palace. The French neoclassical mansion is the historic residence of the U.S. ambassador to Argentina. We speak with Ambassador Mark Stanley when Louisiana Eats returns
after the break. I'm Poppy Tooker, and you're listening to Louisiana Eats, edible content for Louisiana food lovers. Louisiana Eats is brought to you with major support from Blue Plate Mayonnaise, the beloved secret ingredient of Louisiana kitchens for over 90 years, made with just oil, vinegar, and egg yolks. Now Blue Plate is dressing up seafood feasts with a new creamy cocktail sauce. Enhanced with bold horseradish and a secret blend of spices, you just dip, savor, and say, ah. And for a touch of Creole charm, Blue Plate's Creole tartar sauce, complete with pickles, aromatic herbs, and a touch of Creole mustard, all together in that classic mayo base. Blue Plate mayonnaise, it's the good stuff. And from Louisiana Fish Fry, now doing for chicken what they've always done for fish. Fried chicken tenders, wings, sandwiches, and more. Louisiana Fish Fry has you covered with a mix specially for chicken. Louisiana Fish Fry, because life needs Louisiana flavor. And from Visit the North Shore, discover world-class culinary flavors on the North Shore this spring. Experience the bounty of the bayou and rich culture from award-winning chefs, soulful mom-and-pop restaurants, extraordinary bakers, and creative mixologists. To learn more, request the Explore the North Shore Visitor Guide for inspirational stories, custom itineraries, and event information at visitthenorthshore.com. St. Tammany Parish, Louisiana's easy escape, just 40 minutes from New Orleans French Quarter. What a treat it was to visit beautiful Buenos Aires. The food, the music, and the architecture. From colonial to Art Deco to ultramodern, styles from across the centuries line the streets of Argentina's capital. One of the true gems among these notable buildings is a French neoclassical mansion in the upscale Palermo neighborhood. The Bosch Palace, completed in 1917, has been home to the United States Ambassador to Argentina since 1929. I had the opportunity to visit this incredible landmark when I was invited to sit down with current Ambassador Mark Stanley. The diplomat and his wife Wendy have resided in the palace since he assumed office in January 2022. Once we cleared security, we were led up a grand staircase to an ornately decorated sitting room. Coffee service was graciously presented on a table, along with some warm, delicious, American-style chocolate chip cookies, a signature recipe of Ambassador Stanley's wife, Wendy.
Ambassador, I am so honored to be here at the Bosch Palace with you. Would you tell me a little bit about this special place?
Yeah, it's been the home of the United States Ambassador since 1929, and we've had four U.S. presidents actually sleep here. More have visited, but we've had Franklin Roosevelt spent the night here, Dwight Eisenhower, George H.W. Bush, and Barack and Michelle Obama all spent several days here. It was built between 1912 and 1917 by Ernesto Bosch and his wife. She was from the Alvear family, which was a very prominent family in Argentina. So was his. And he was a diplomat. Among other places, he was an ambassador to France. And he fell in love with French architecture. So when they came back to Argentina, they brought with them an architect from France, and they love Versailles, and so you'll see a lot of Versailles kind of influence here. It's 43,000 square feet, and it's absolutely gorgeous. So Bosch, his wife, and seven kids moved in 1917, and they had a lot of parties. It was the place to go to, and all of our ambassadors were invited there between 1917 and 1929, when our ambassador in 1929 was charged with getting a new embassy in Argentina. And so our ambassador decided he wanted this place, the Bosch Palace, and Bosch told him to basically bugger off. And I normally use another word, but we're on radio. And our ambassador badgered and badgered and badgered Mr. Bosch. And he just said, no, I'm not interested. We love this house. My wife is the one with the money in the family, and she's not interested in selling it, and we're staying. So finally, the ambassador came up with an idea. He says, you know, you've never given me an amount that you would take, and it's my foreign office that's bugging me to buy this place, and I have an idea that would shut him up. Give me a price that you would take it that is so obnoxiously high that they'll say, we're done. We're not going to pay that much. That's ridiculous. Move on to somewhere else, ambassador. So Bosch says, okay, 3 million pesos. And the ambassador said, thank you. And so they thought they'd be done. The next day, our ambassador showed up with a check for 3 million pesos. And Bosch says, oh my God, I never thought you would say yes. I'm in trouble. My wife's going to kill me. And she was very angry. She tore out a chapel that was on the top floor. She tore out a fireplace when they moved out. But we ended up with a lot of the furnishings, a lot of the furniture. To the day she died, she still resented the United States for snookering her husband. And I think he was in trouble till the day he died.
That is such a wonderful story.
The residence, it's probably one of the top two or three U.S. ambassador residences in the world. And I always promised my wife, if she married me, that one day she'd live in a palace. I just didn't tell her it would only be for 3 years.
Now, Ambassador, you're from Texas, and that, goodness knows, is beef country. Would you perhaps give me some comparisons about how you see that particular commodity in Texas and how it compares or contrasts here in Argentina?
I always say that there's a lot at stake to our relationship between Argentina and the United States. And I'm always asked to contrast or compare the beef. The beef in Argentina is incredible. And you have U.S. ranchers who have interests here in Argentina, and you have Argentine ranchers who have interests in the United States. And they exchange semen and Brahma bull and Angus and et cetera. They do wonderful asados here. Asados are barbecue. It's quicker. Ours is low and slow. Theirs is open. The only difference I'll say is ours has a stronger wood taste and ours has more spice. My brother-in-law is from Buenos Aires, and the two words he always uses the most is no spice. They come from a culture from Italy and Spain. 80% of Argentines are Italian or Spanish, and you would think they would bring the spice cultures from those countries, but no, they do not like spice here. They put a little bit of salt and really not much pepper, and that's it. We like our garlic and our onion salt and paprika, et cetera. And they don't put anything like that. So I've learned to love both. So here at the residence, I take the beautiful Argentine meats and I apply Texas smoke to it. And my Argentine guests go crazy. They love it. Absolutely go nuts over it.
What are the exports of Argentina? Are there things that people should look for in the United States?
Well, I think one thing you might start seeing soon with Messi being so popular is mate. It's a warm drink, but you're starting to see iced mate more in Miami. That's really good. What's really sad to me is I go to Central Market in our HEB in Dallas, and I see Argentine shrimp, these big, beautiful shrimp. I can't buy them in Argentina. All the great shrimp gets exported to the United States, and we don't get to eat it here. There's not a market for fish here. We don't get fresh fish in Buenos Aires because they don't eat it. And so it goes up to the United States. But they have a black hake, which is like a Chilean sea bass. They send that up to the United States. Delicious. You can get that too. The wines, of course, have well matured. 15, 20 years ago, you wouldn't have been as impressed with Argentine wines as you are now. The Malbecs, the blends that you're seeing come out of, not just out of Mendoza, but out of Rio Negro, which is another province, out of Chubut, out of other places, are just delicious.
What are the things that you personally love about Argentina?
Wendy and I think, love the most about Argentina are the people and the relationships that they have with their families and with each other, the friendships you see and the families and the connections, the way they love each other. It's truly remarkable. You see men embrace men, women embrace women, families just are so close here, and that's particularly wonderful.
It is truly a wonderful place, and I hope that all my Louisiana Eats listeners will be inspired to come to Argentina and explore this incredible country. This has been such a delightful honor to have this opportunity to sit here in the Bosch Palace with you and enjoy this conversation. Thank you, Ambassador Stanley, for welcoming us here.
Thank you so much. Send me some gumbo.
That was Mark Stanley, the United States Ambassador to Argentina, speaking with me in his Buenos Aires residence, the Bosch Palace. My trip to Buenos Aires had been a delight. The Argentinians I met were kind and lovely, and I was charmed by the sights and sounds of the city. The architecture, the wine, the food, and the desserts. For the record, I've never tasted so much dulce de leche in such a short period of time. But on the final day of my trip, no one was more surprised than me to find myself sampling a dessert in a strangely familiar environment.
Who would ever think you come to Buenos Aires and somehow you end up in a McDonald's?
The last place that I would have ever thought we'd wanted to go, and here we are.
The trip to Argentina was prompted by our friends, the Zanders. Ron, who is a true foodie, kept insisting to me that we had to go to McDonald's. Mickey D's? In Buenos Aires? Ron asserted there was an incredible d'auberge cake on the menu there, very reminiscent of the Beulah Ledner New Orleans specialty we all love so much. Finally, I acquiesced and met Ron at a busy McDonald's on Florita, a bustling shopping district right in the heart of Buenos Aires.
So, Ron, this is shocking. We walk in the door at the McDonald's, and here is this beautiful pastry case. Now, tell me how you discovered this, and take us on a little tour of it.
So actually, we were in another city outside of Buenos Aires called Tigre, and we went into a McDonald's because we just wanted some coffee, and we found that they had d'auberge cake.
Just like at home.
Exactly like home, except it's dulce de leche rather than chocolate or lemon.
Because everything in Argentina seems to be flavored dulce de leche, eh?
Eh, exactly. And I also find that everything in Buenos Aires, the people are very refined and cultured, it seems, on a whole, and they promote the best quality of foods. So you have your regular area of McDonald's where you can get your Big Mac, but then you have this very upscale area where you can get cappuccinos and espressos and lattes and any type of coffee drink that you'd like made with an Italian espresso machine.
They have chocolate croissants. They have ham and cheese croissants. They have all sorts of pound cakes and a cheesecake. But they have that dobash cake. And what do they call it here?
They call it torta Argentina.
That indicates that they must think this is their cake.
We know better.
Well, Ron, I think we need to try it.
I think we're going to order some and some cafe. Cafe?
Sí.
Sí.
¿Te vas? Hola, ¿cómo estás? Bien.
Uno grande café con leche, otro uno torta Argentina.
Dale. Azúcar edulcorante, ¿qué te dejo? ¿Tu nombre? ¿Tu nombre? Name.
Ron.
3,100 sería.
The cost of this transaction seems to be an astounding $3.10. Well, you know, Ronnie, what they say is, to taste is to believe. So it's all about the taste.
I'm going to let you have the first taste.
Good
stuff.
Well, what do you think, Ronnie?
I think it's delicious.
I think it's delicious, too.
It's not the same, exactly. It's firmer.
It's drier, and the dulce con leche does not have the same pudding consistency. But it's yummy. It's certainly yummy, and we're going to make quick work of it.
Well, what a good find.
Thank you, Ronnie. Thank you for this recommendation and for all of the great recommendations about how to have a great vacation here in Argentina.
I'm gonna gain weight in Argentina.
That was my friend Ron Zander and me rounding out this edition of Louisiana Eats at a McDonald's in Argentina.
Adiós, muchachos, compañeros de mi vida, barra querida, si apenas tiempo me toca a mí hoy emprender la retirada. Debo alejarme de mi buena muchachada. Adiós, muchachos, ya me voy y me resigno.
That's it for this week's edition of Louisiana Eats, edible content for Louisiana food lovers. Catch up on previous editions of Louisiana Eats on poppytooker.com, where over a decade of Louisiana Eats is available for pod and webcasting, along with recipes and cooking class videos, too. And don't forget to rate us on your preferred podcast platform. Major support for Louisiana Eats comes from Blue Plate Mayonnaise. When your poor boys, potato salads, and remoulade need that authentic New Orleans flavor. Blue Plate Mayo, that's the good stuff. And the Audubon Clubhouse from Dickie Brennan and Company. Situated in Audubon Park, just off Magazine Street, the newly renovated and expanded property adds a bar and private dining space to the expansive wraparound porch and dining room. Serving lunch Monday through Friday, weekend brunch, and now dinner Monday through Thursday till 9 p.m. Louisiana Eats is also made possible with major support from Popeye's Louisiana Kitchen, Louisiana Fish Fry, Crystal Hot Sauce, Rouse's Markets, Visit the North Shore, and Camellia Beans. Camellia's new red beans for two and white beans for two include everything needed to cook two authentically seasoned bowls of beans, scaled for today's smaller households. Learn more at CamelliaBrand.com. And from D'Agostino Pasta, celebrating our culture with fleur-de-lis, crawfish, and alligator-shaped pastas. All handcrafted in Louisiana, just as it's been done in Sicily for centuries. Visit D'AgostinoPasta.com to learn more. original theme music composed by David Pomerleau and performed by Johnny Sketch and the Dirty Notes. Big thanks to senior producer Joe Schreiner, producers Blake Longlinet and Steve Himmelfarb, with writing contributions from Becky Retz, and to our business manager and social media maven, Maddie Mulladue. Catch up with us anytime on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook, too. Louisiana Eats is a production of Poppy Tooker Broadcasting.